Spring in Charleston, South Carolina, is a resplendent affair, and by the beginning of April, it is always well underway. The azaleas, camellias, hyacinths, early-blooming magnolias, and forsythias, as if competing for attention, all contribute to the riot of color and fragrance. And on this particular day, as the sun prepared to rise, there was the promise that it would be glorious for almost everyone in this scenic, historic town. Everyone, that is, except for Carl Vandermeer, a successful young lawyer who had grown up in nearby West Ashley. Most mornings, regardless of the time of the year, but particularly in the springtime, Carl would be part of a sizable group of joggers who ran along the Battery, which was located at the southern tip of Charleston's peninsula. The Battery fronted that portion of the expanse of Charleston Harbor formed by the confluence of the Cooper and the Ashley Rivers. Lined with restored 19th-century mansions and boasting a public garden, the Battery was one of the city's most attractive and popular locales. Like most of his fellow runners, Carl lived in the immediate and charming residential neighborhood known to the locals as SOB, the acronym for South of Broad. Broad Street was a thoroughfare that ran east to west across the Charleston Peninsula between the two rivers. The reason Carl was not jogging this beautiful spring morning was the same reason he had not been jogging for the previous month. He had torn the anterior cruciate ligament in his right knee during the final basketball game of the past season. He and a half dozen other athletically inclined lawyers had formed a team to play in a city league. Carl had always been into sports through high school and Duke University, where he played Division I lacrosse with considerable renown. Having made it a point to keep himself in shape, even during law school, he thought of himself as generally immune to injury, especially since he was only 29 years old. Throughout his athletic career, he had never suffered more than a couple of sprained ankles. So, the knee injury had come as an unwelcome surprise. One minute he was perfectly fine, having played the entire first half of the game and scoring 18 points in the process. With the ball in his possession, he had faked the fellow guarding him to the left and then went to the right to drive to the basket. He never made it. The next thing he knew, he was sprawled on the floor, unsure of what had happened. Embarrassed, he got right to his feet. There was some discomfort in his right knee, but it wasn't bad. He took a few steps to walk it out and immediately collapsed a second time. That was when he knew it was serious. A visit to Dr. Gordon Weaver, an orthopedic surgeon, had confirmed the diagnosis to be a torn anterior cruciate ligament. Even Carl, a complete medical novice by choice, had been able to see it on the MRI. The bad news was that he'd have to have surgery if he wanted to play any kind of sports. Dr. Weaver said the best operation involved diverting a portion of his own patellar tendon up through his joint. The only good news was that his health plan would cover the whole deal, including the rehab. His bosses at the law firm where he worked were not thrilled about the necessary downtime, but missing work was not what bothered Carl. What bothered Carl was that he had a particularly strong distaste for anything having to do with medicine and needles. He had been known to pass out from merely having blood drawn, and he didn't even like the smell of rubbing alcohol because of its associations. He had never been hospitalized, but he had visited friends who had been, and the experience had freaked him out, so going into the hospital that morning for surgery was going to be a challenge, to say the very least. The irony of his embarrassing and secret medical phobia was that his steady girlfriend for the last 2 years, Lynn Pierce, was a fourth-year medical student. She often made him lightheaded with her stories of her daily experiences at the Mason-Dixon Medical Center, where Carl was scheduled to have his surgery in a few hours. She had been the one who had recommended Dr. Weaver and had explained in agonizing detail exactly how Carl's knee was going to be repaired. It also had been at Lynn's insistence that he request that his operation be Dr. Weaver's first case on a Monday morning. The rationale, she explained, was that everyone would be fresh and on the ball, meaning there would be less chance for mistakes or scheduling problems. Carl knew that Lynn meant well with all this, but her comments only made him even more nervous. Lynn had offered to spend the night as she had on Saturday night to make sure Carl followed his pre-op orders and got to the hospital on time, but Carl had begged off. He was afraid she might end up innocently saying something that would make him even more worried than he already was. But he didn't tell her that. He said he thought he'd sleep better alone, and reassured her that he would follow his pre-op instructions to the letter. She had accepted gracefully and said that she'd come visit him in his hospital room as soon as he came back from the PACU, or post-anesthesia care unit. Carl had never mentioned his medical phobia to Lynn, for fear that she, at a minimum, would laugh at him. Nor did he let on how anxious he felt about his upcoming surgery. To preserve his ego, there were some things better left unsaid.